Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello there. Welcome to episode number 612 of Smart Podcast Trashy Books. I'm Sarah Wendell, and my guest today is Len Penny. Len Penny's book of Scots poetry, titled Poems, is out in the U.S. this week. And you might have seen my post about her book launch earlier on Smart Bitches. Len is my guest today, and we are going to talk about poetry. We're also going to talk about healing from abuse and trauma and using humor to overcome the, quote, cultural hangover of linguistic oppression. So, you know, light stuff and heavy stuff. Plus, she reads one of my favorites of her poems, and I was practically levitating out of my desk chair. You can find the transcript, links to the books that we talk about, the performances that we talk about, and more at smartbitchestrashybooks.com/podcast under episode 612. I do want to offer a general heads up about this episode. We are going to be talking about intimate partner violence, domestic abuse, depression, and stalking as part of this conversation. So if that is not something you can put in your eardrums, I completely understand. I want to say hello and thank you to the Patreon community, especially to Paris L., who is one of the newest members of the Patreon. Hello, thank you. If you are supporting the show, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate it. You are keeping me going. You're making sure that every episode has a marvelously artisan crafted transcript from Garlic Knitter. Hey, Garlic Knitter. And if what we do here with this show is to your liking and you would like to join the Patreon, it's the most wonderful community. Have a look at patreon.com/smartbitches. Monthly pledges start at $1. And among the benefits are the full PDF scans of the Romantic Times magazines. And these are beefy, chonky scans, y'all. They're very large. We also have a wonderful Patreon Discord and there's bonus episodes. So thank you for considering your support. And thank you to the Patreon community for being so wonderful. Support for this episode comes from Lumi. If you are looking to feel confident head to toe, have you considered making the switch to Lumi? Lumi is a game-changing whole-body deodorant powered by mandelic acid and designed by an OBGYN. It's clinically proven to block odor all day, thanks to its one-of-a-kind pH-optimized formula. And we have a special offer. New customers get $5 off Lumi Starter Pack with our exclusive code. Use Sarah15 at LumiDeodorant.com. That's LumiDeodorant.com. While doing research, I found a lot of people online talking about Lumi, especially on Reddit. Folks who stress about body odor, especially from changes brought about by menopause, love Lumi because how well it works. The reviews online are really touching and honest about how much Lumi has helped people feel more confident. How does it work? Well, Some products try to mask odor with a fragrance, but Lumi is formulated and powered by mandelic acid to stop odor before it starts. It's more like a pre-odorant. It is baking soda free, it is paraben free, and it has terrific scents like clean tangerine, my teenager's favorite, lavender sage, my personal favorite, toasted coconut, but they also have unscented, which is terrific if you are scent sensitive. I know many people are. Lumi's starter pack is perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, cream tube deodorant, and two free products of your choice, like a mini body wash and deodorant wipes, and free shipping. And the products in the starter pack, y'all, they last a really long time. As a special offer for listeners, new customers get $5 off a Lumi starter pack with code SARAH15 at LumiDeodorant.com. That equates to over 40% off your starter pack when you visit LumiDeodorant.com and use code SARAH15. Thank you to Lumi for supporting this episode, and thank you to you for supporting our advertisers. All right, let's do this podcast. On with my conversation with Len Penny about poems.
Hello, I am Len Penny. I am a poet. I write in the Scots language. I also tend to write about topics which affect me, like misogyny, the patriarchy, and domestic abuse.
Hardly any topics for discussion. So congrats on the US release of Poems. I just need to tell you how many times I went round with my own autocorrect because it kept, and I'm like writing up the questions for the interview, and I had to keep going back over because it kept autocorrecting them to poems. And I'm like, that's not the word. I understand that you think I speak American English, because I do, but that's the word I meant. Me and autocorrect, we had like three rounds about this.
Imagine me writing the book.
Oh my God.
Having every single word.
Little red line.
When I write them on my phone will autocorrect it, which is really helpful in English because I can't spell. But see, when I'm trying to write Scots, Scotocorrect is just, it's the bane of my existence because it will not believe me.
No.
When I say, this is a valid word, this is a valid, please believe me. So I put it this way, you know that we add to dictionary function? I have worn that out.
Wait, is there even a Scots language autocorrect option? I'm going to guess not. There is now.
On phones, I think it's one of the Swift key options. There's a Scots language thing, which I did have on my last one. The only issue with that is it's set to a specific dialect of Scots or a specific orthography, which anyone who knows anything about Scots knows we don't have a standardized orthography. So basically, unless you want to compromise on your own spelling, you have to kind of match it with that. So if you want to be a bit avant-garde like I do when it comes to spelling and take a more hands-off approach, you have to make up your own rules.
Yeah. I imagine your dictionary is quite robust at this time.
That's it. I mean, see, me and the Dictionary of the Scots Language online were like that.
Yeah.
My phone open up, it's like, hello, you're back for the DSL again? Uh-huh. Hello, welcome.
So for readers who are not familiar with your work, what will people find inside this book of poetry?
A lot of pain. Genuinely. A lot. I was reading it back the other day and I got quite emotional. Because I obviously have been therapized to the hilt now, but when I wrote the book, I started writing it directly after leaving an abusive relationship. So I was in this really dark, horrible, scary, sad, lonely place, looking up from that deep pit of depression. And so what people will find in the book is not a journey from the pit to getting out of the pit, but a journey where you become okay sometimes with being in the pit and you continue to look out with the pit. So for me, Poems is a book about connection. It's connection to the self, because when you've been abused, you lose that connection. It's about connection to family and friends that you lose. It's connections you don't even want, you know, connections to oppressive structures or oppressive people. So for me, Poems is a book about the many ways that we are connected to each other, whether we like it or not.
I definitely found that to be true. And congrats on being able to read the audiobook. That must have been some cathartic recording.
Oh, that was because we did, an amazing little studio in Edinburgh, right? And I had like 20 million steps and my knees are absolutely gubbed. So by the time I got up there, I was like... And then he was like, right. I said, is there an order you want me to do? He was like, no, just start and work your way through it. And if you've read the book, you'll know I deliberately didn't put happy at the start, happy at the end. It's all the way. It's because progress isn't linear. So for me, what I did was I juxtapose the happy and the sad. So I would start reading the audiobook and go straight from screaming and shouting and swearing to be like, hello, my sweet darling. Welcome. And also, you read the titles before you read the poems, but the title's not supposed to reflect the poem because it's purely for admin purposes. So I'd be like, for example, there's a piece. Can I swear?
As much as you want.
So I would start and be like, morning fucker. Morning fucker. And like see the, just honestly, it became a bit of a meme by the end because I was just having so much. And I hope that comes across.
It does.
Even though it's really intense and cathartic, it was such a privilege because for me, I'm a performance poet. I had to be convinced to write the stuff down because for me, it lives in the moment.
Yeah.
And I'm a control freak. So to being able to do the audiobook was me just like letting go and doing it in an ideal performance. It got to the point where, you know, if I messed up, usually they want you to pick up and drop straight back in. I would be like, I want to go straight to the beginning again because yeah. I can't do this take again. It has to be in the moment.
Yes.
Always advocate, if you're reading the book, read it out loud. Have a go. People say to me, when you're writing Scots, nobody will understand you. Who's nobody? Because my parents will understand me. My friends will understand me. Scots speakers will understand me. What they're actually saying there is, I don't value Scots readers. So for me, what I wanted to do was use Scots in a way that was accessible to people who didn't speak it beforehand, but also make sure that I was honouring the community, the linguistic community that I came from.
And it's also a very colonialist attitude to say, well, I don't have access to this, so therefore it's wrong.
It's almost, you know when toddlers think that their experiences are universal?
Oh, of course, yes.
They skin their knees, so the world is just falling down around them.
Yeah.
I think it there's something quite primal about selfishness. And I think a lot of people need to understand that accessibility helps us all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you might not need a certain feature of accessibility right now, but you may need it in the future.
Yeah.
And even if you never need it, you know, when a rising tide lifts all boats, we're all benefited by accessibility. And that's that can be applied to languages, but it can also be applied to things like subtitles. I subtitle all my videos, and I always have done, because even though someone might not need it, I need it sometimes.
Oh yeah. I struggle with auditory processing on Netflix. If it's a random American show, I can't hear without my subtitles.
That's it. But also there's areas of accessibility that you don't even know you're reaching.
Yes.
There was a woman who commented saying that she was a breastfeeding mother and she didn't want to wake the baby up when she was scrolling through TikTok while she was breastfeeding.
Fair.
So she would keep the volume off. You know, it's for me, accessibility can only improve situations. You're never taking accessibility away from other people by making other people more, you know, welcome and invited.
Now, I'm going to skip ahead in my question list because I love learning about endangered and persecuted language like Scots, Manx. I went to the Isle of Man and that was amazing because everything is in both languages. And there are schools where they do the whole school day in Manx. And then there's Welsh and Gallego and all of these languages that were at one point banned or attempted to be eradicated. And that's really important work to keep a language alive because, like you said, it's partially it is the performance of it, the existence of it when it's happening, not like writing down the rules of it, but actually using it. And one of the things that I love about your videos and especially on Instagram and on TikTok is that you're trying to teach a marginalized and persecuted language while also including all of the concepts of identity and context. And yet, you don't have a lot of time. It's a little video. They're very short. How do you select the words and then try to distill all of that stuff into such a small space? Like, that is itself quite an accomplishment. For example, I really appreciated your video about Herkel Durkel as a term that's removed from context. And I think I commented this on Instagram that it's a lot like hygge, where it's been extracted from Scandi culture as a reason for consumption. And it's been repackaged for consumption and like marketability rather than inserted into its context.
Absolutely. So it's the commodification of culture.
Yes, that's the word I was trying to look for. Thank you for giving it to me.
No, it's surreal to me because I have joined the Scots language community online. It was it predated me, but I joined it, and it was a struggle. It was a struggle to engage people in Scots language because they didn't perceive it as being cool. They didn't perceive it as being something that was worthwhile to do. So for me to then see people who did not have a vested interest in Scots and weren't Scots speakers repackaging Scots for an audience that didn't care about the origins, a lot of the culture that people assume Scotland has and holds dear has itself been commodified culture. So things like clan tartans, that is an invented tradition. That is a Victorian thing. That is something that was designed to sell an idea. And what that has led to is ethno-nationalism. It has led to gatekeeping and exclusion of Scottish people themselves. And it has created this false idea of what Scottish culture looks like. So what I want to do with my channel is to present authentic Scottish culture. Yes, the words that I cover might not be used every day, but they once were. Every word that I cover has historical research gone into it. I know people think I just turn on the camera and you know, open my mouth and let my belly rumble, but there is research done into it so that it is authentic culture.
Yeah.
And in my mind, people who say hurkle-durkle is a Gaelic word, or they say hurkle-durkle is a cool English word, that's not cultural appropriation. That's cultural erasure.
Yeah.
Because what they're doing isn't appropriation. It's basically using the culture in the right way, because the word does mean that. But it's erasing the history and it's erasing the cultural context of that word, because in the comments of every single hurkle-durkle video will be Scottish people saying, this isn't a real word. I don't know this word. I've never heard this word. Now, those experiences are based not on a lack of knowledge about Scots, but on a lack of exposure to Scots based on a cultural hangover of linguistic oppression.
Yeah.
So it's people getting involved in a conversation they don't know the context of.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's why it's annoying, because if, you know, it always ends up going viral. It always ends up going viral, this word hurkle-durkle, because it's hilarious. It's bed-rotting, basically. It's this current cultural phenomenon of, I'm lazy, but there's a word to describe it and we're all in community. Or I don't want to get out of bed and I want to sit, which I do all the time. There's nothing wrong with it. I love a good hurkle-durkle, but the word itself cannot be divorced from the context and the culture. Obviously, as a linguist, I want people to use these words. I want people to share them. But one of the biggest sort of tenets of my entire, you know, channel and my entire page, my entire platform, is Scottish culture should be shared authentically.
Yeah. And that's one of the larger contexts of the videos that I think work and why some of yours go viral. Although I will be honest and say the hair helps.
It does. And that annoyed me. It annoys me so much, because I know if I take my hair down, the video is going to get 2 times the amount of views. But I'm also cognizant of the fact that people listen to me when it comes to Scottish culture because I'm a wee white lassie with ginger hair. Because my peers who are Glaswegian, who are from the borders, who are from Shetland, and who are people of colour, will make the same or similar content talking about Scottish culture and language, and will be told in no uncertain terms that they are not qualified to do that based on their appearance, their background, their ethnicity. So a lot of the videos I end up making are bursting people's bubble.
A little bit.
It really does. I'm more than happy to. Scottish culture is open to all. You know, it's good if you have a granny who's Scottish, or you've got a great granny who's Scottish. You don't need it. It's not a prerequisite.
No.
And what I am always careful to say to people is they want to assume that I'm 100% Scottish, whatever that means. But I'm not. My dad's not even Scottish. So even by the metric of the people who want to be racist or who want to espouse racist rhetoric, I'm not as Scottish as they want me to be. But they don't know that, because I guess white people don't need to prove their Scottish identity.
No. Now, you've had what I would call a truly tumultuous book launch for your book in the UK. A few things happened. So first of all, I hope that your US book launch is extremely successful, but extremely boring. I would like to be mellow and chill and like utterly not tumultuous and ups and downs of emotion. I want it to be the most chill, boring book launch. Successful, but chill.
Yeah.
Do you have any events planned for the US launch? Are you coming over? Can we show you around?
It's so expensive. I will be appearing virtually on everyone's screens every day, but I think I'm a wee bit far. I'll maybe book two. They'll be able to shoot me over. I've been to America and I thought it was absolutely gorgeous. But for me, I'm terrified of flying.
Well, that presents a problem.
I mean, it's if you were closer, I'd be there the now. You know, if you were next door, I'd be over all the time. But the book launch was it was a lot.
It was a lot.
I think I could have handled it better if it were all the highs or all the lows.
But it was the
juxtaposition of the two, and it was surreal. It was so. I don't think I've ever had a time where I felt guilty about success more than the book launch.
Yeah.
Because I'd be on stage every night talking to crowds who were amazing, wonderful, had such a good time. And then I would come back to the hotel room and have to reconcile that with the fact that all of this information that wasn't within my control was being exposed all over the internet. So it was a strange situation where I felt safest and most relaxed on stage.
Oh, I'm actually really glad to hear that, because one of the things I was wondering as you were going through this was whether or not you felt safe in a crowded room. Now, are you okay to talk about what happened at your book launch and everything? I should have asked that first, and I apologize for not making sure. But from what I saw, your book came out and you're doing events and you're traveling around. And a documentary that you'd been part of for several years launched on the BBC while your book launch was happening, which sounds great. Like, hey, my face is everywhere, except that it was a book about navigating the domestic violence laws in the courts of Scotland because you had survived a domestic abuse situation. And so this incredibly painful part of your life is now public and being consumed at the same time as you're like, and also a book that I would like you to consume, please, too. Wait, ooh, that's a lot.
How do you promote yourself?
Yeah.
How do you? Because that's it. Because I'm perhaps too averse to, quote unquote, capitalizing on my trauma, which sounds ridiculous because my book is a lot about trauma, but I wanted to completely divorce the two things.
Yeah.
I did. And then, you know, the news were getting in touch, there were articles being written, you know, and it went from being Scots poets on the bestseller list to Scots poet reveals 4-year domestic abuse horror. How do you, and then I had a Guardian article where I was writing about domestic abuse, and at the bottom there's a little bit about the poison, and I was just thinking, people are going to think that quite a few people did actually accuse me of orchestrating the domestic abuse in order to sell books. Now, not to blow my own horn, but I feel as if I could confidently and competently write about a bunch of topics. Do you know what I mean? It's not like I thought when I was 17, do you know what would be great for a book? I'll just get myself in an abusive relationship so I'll have some great writing material. Like, I just, it made me feel as though I was watching myself from above, and yeah. I could see holistically how it looked to the outside world, and it was completely different to how it felt, because for me, all I wanted to do was sit in the joy of it.
Yeah.
But it's sort of a perfect example, a perfect representation of how trauma feels,
yeah.
Because just as you're reaching that point of success, just as you're with that new person or in that new situation or with the new happy you, there comes the trauma to kick the feet out from under you. So for me, it was a very humbling experience, but it was also a very good learning experience, because yeah. I need to schedule things better. I need to learn how to say no. I need to learn how to say no. And that's why having the Canongate team behind me and Eve White and all my people on my team now has been amazing. Because at the start of this sort of career, if you want to call it that, I was saying yes to everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Well, you're in
burning.
If you're a new writer, you feel like you have to take every opportunity. You have to take every opportunity. That's part of the job. And it's like, wait, whoa. One of the things you said when you were doing videos about this whole situation, and I can believe, but knowing as much as I do about publishing, the idea of your publicists at your and you as the writer for your book of poems just ringing up the BBC and be like, listen, we need you to launch this documentary like right in these datelines. You think you guys could do that for me? Like, that doesn't happen. That's absurd. But of course, people are going to think that.
They didn't even know that. Do you know what's the worst thing about me? Is that I'm so good at compartmentalizing that I forget to inform all the parties that everyone's phoned on. So I phoned my publicist and I was like, hey, just a quick question. There's this documentary I've been doing. do you think this will clash with anything? And she was like,
what?
CC me in right the fuck now. Because I didn't tell them. Ooh. In my head, they were so separate. Because I wanted to be anonymous in the documentary at the start. Because I thought, there's no way this isn't going to look like some sort of, hey, I'm Lynn Penny, poet. Here's my trauma. Consume it for money. But, you know, I, at the start, wanted to be anonymous. I wanted to divorce it from my work. But then as the process went on, it became clear that my platform could help inform as many people as possible about what domestic abuse look like, and also what domestic abuse can look like when you're in a job where you can't tell everyone what's going on. So yeah. I was like, right, I'll use my face, I'll use my image, I'll use my platform to boost the documentary, which was good. But then it meant that, hey, we've got this book coming out at the same time. How are we going to make this, first of all, not look like some sort of little grubby rubbing the hands together money trip, but also how are we going to mitigate the fallout from literally every single iota of trauma being spread across the news, the newspapers, the tabloids, because the Sun got involved, like, you know, and the thing is, like, there's so many style guides when it comes to writing about domestic abuse. Like, there's certain things that you should say and you shouldn't say. And one of the things is you shouldn't sensationalize it. So for me to read articles by journalists who were just like, oh, famous person's being domestically abused, this is gonna really slap. And for me, it was so, I don't want to say violating, but it was exposing.
Yes.
It was definitely exposing. Because I wasn't at home either. I was in hotels.
Yeah. I was worried. I was genuinely worried about you. I don't mean to sound all parasocial and weird, but I was genuinely worried about you.
I think everyone was, I mean, I was so lucky that my partner got to come with me on tour. So he was there, but there's only so much other people can do, because see, when you're sitting on your own and you're thinking, this is my life. And don't get me wrong. I love my life. I love my job. I love what I do. God, I really wish I hadn't been abused. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How much more mental fortitude would I have had I been allowed to mature without that obstacle? Because I've had to heal around it. And now I feel sometimes like my life happens to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so for me, the tour was very much a case of, I needed to lean on everyone around me in order to facilitate that, because if I'd been left up to my own devices, I would have called every single person and said, I can't do this.
Yeah.
But I needed people around me to say, you can do this. You don't have to, but you can. You have the capacity if you want to.
Yeah. Now, I noticed around the time that all of this was happening and you were posting about it, and then the documentary came out, I also noticed that for a time you mentioned, I think it was The Guardian, I don't have the quote in front of me, but I think it was The Guardian, that the police had told you to go dark on social media, to take down, because I think you were still on Twitter at this point, to take down what you were doing on social media and to go dark for a time. And I noticed that it was written up on r/Scotland on Reddit that you had left Twitter. They were talking about it.
It was so surreal.
It was so surreal. Like, wait, you people know who I am?
Yeah. So the thing is, I didn't.
You didn't? You didn't do that?
No. I had my final exams for uni and people were being arseholes on Twitter. And I thought, do you know what?
On Twitter?
I know. I was like, I can't do this right now. I'm going to leave so I don't get myself really mentally ill. I took like 2 days off, handed the reins to my account to a pal. And there was like multiple newspaper articles about it. And that's when I was like, look. Why do you care? Like, not about me. I'm not like, why do you care about me? But why are you a journalist writing about someone taking a break off Twitter? Because all that's doing is adding fuel to the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was always done in this sort of misogynistic, she's been hounded, she's been... There was even one who said she wilted, and then this male celebrity had sort of given me some support, and he'd revived me. He'd brought me back from the brink. Like,
what?
Come on. What are we doing here? Because I was reading all this stuff being like, what? I've been hounded off Twitter. I've closed down my account. No, I haven't. And then I went on private, not because of anything that trolls were saying to me, but because I was being actively stalked and I was trying to mitigate that.
That's what I was thinking, that that had all corresponded, especially around when r/Scotland was writing about it, that you had gone dark to protect yourself.
It was a combination of people mishearing, misunderstanding, misinterpreting, just making stuff up. Because for people to say that I left Twitter because of trolls is just, it annoyed me because I couldn't come out and say, actually, I've left Twitter because of this one specific troll that I was in a relationship with. And
yeah.
Refused to let me go. So for me, it was a bit about not being able to control my own narrative. I was having to sort of sit back and let half-truths and assumptions be made about me. And I really don't like not being able to tell the truth. So yeah. Having to keep that sort of to, because I didn't want to talk about it before the court case was included.
No, you probably couldn't.
I didn't want to impact the court case, but also I didn't want to stoke the flames.
No.
I didn't want to give this person any reason to, you know, any reason to think about me or talk about me or you know, contribute to that fire that was engulfing me. So for me, I had to sort of take a step back and not control the narrative, which is awful for me because I'm a massive control freak. I want everybody to know everything about a situation in order for them to make informed decisions. So for me to have to sit back and hear these things being said about me was very difficult. It was very difficult.
I am familiar with this problem. Yeah. Because I am a reviewer and there's a very big be nice culture in romance. I've noticed that there's a very big culture of if you don't have anything nice to say, you shouldn't say anything at all. And I'm like, you're making a product for entertainment that I've paid for and I'm going to state my opinion loudly because I can. The narrative is that I'm very mean, that I'm very mean-spirited. And I'm like, really? I don't think so, but okay. Yeah, I'm very familiar with not having control of your narrative and it's very frustrating because you want to tell people, but then I have to think, well, how much energy can I devote to correcting someone else's narrative that I had nothing to do with forming in the first place? That's really hard to let go of.
It is. I used to stay up till 1, 2, 3 in the morning responding to like, Scots isn't a language. You're a slag. You're ugly. You know, I would knock my pan in, trying desperately to inform. Because at that point, I was thinking these people just don't understand. Yeah. If they knew Scots was a language, if they knew the history, if I just talked to them, you know, in good faith, because I had such a hard time, and I still do, identify when people are acting in bad faith.
Me too. So yes.
Because you think I wouldn't do that. So, you know, the only reason I must be in this situation would be if I didn't have enough information. So I'm going to give them the information. Then they'll be nice to me. I'll educate the bullies out of hating me. But it doesn't work like that. So a lot of the learning journey, ironically, the more educational content I make, the more I educate myself on how to put boundaries in place. But also to understand some people are just arseholes.
Yeah, some people just suck.
Okay, that's okay. You can just, I mean, also, because I have received some negative criticism of the book, and that's been so difficult. Which is, I'm glad I'm talking to you, because as a reviewer, you'll be able to understand with the other side of that.
Oh, absolutely. I'm also an author, and I've gotten negative reviews of my work, so I completely understand both sides of it. I will give you my nutshell view of how to interact with reviews as both a person who writes reviews and an author who has received them. The review is always not for the author. You're done. Like, I can't change any of the book. It's published. It's out. It's done. It's done. It's done. But the review is about that person's experience with the book, which again, is hard to let go of, but I have no control over that narrative. And sometimes a review is about someone who just didn't connect with it and had problems with it. And sometimes the criticisms are, you know, valid. I've received reviews where I'm like, oh, you're right. I did screw that up. Shit. That sucks. Can't change it. But also,
that's it. It's the not being able to change.
Yeah, I can't change it. There's nothing I can do. I used to give a whole workshop about how to interact with reviews as an author. And the thing that I would say over and over is, if the reviewer said the name of your book and maybe even said your name, possibly even spelled it correctly, you're good. You're absolutely good. You ever go to the fridge and you find something a little furry in the fridge and you open the container and you're like, oh, this smells bad. And you hand it to someone, they're 100% going to lean in to see if it smells bad, right? That's it. If I'm like, oh, this smells good, someone's going to be like, all right, you know, glad. I'm glad the strawberry jam smells like strawberry jam. That's great. But if you say to somebody, oh, does this smell bad? Is this milk gone off? They're going to be like, well, okay. Everyone wants to know where everyone else's line of bad is. If I ever sold reviews as a romance novel reviewer, if I ever decided that I was going to make money by selling reviews, I would just sell reviews that say, this book had too much sex in it, 1 star. because that review would sell so many books to the people who are like, I'm sorry, there's no such thing as too much sex. Please give me this book right now. Put it in my hands. So everyone wants to know where everyone else's line of bad is so they can see whether that line aligns with their own. And I've never seen a review where someone's like, I didn't like this book because this heroine said that and this happened in the book, and have somebody go, well, gosh, that's that person's career is tanked forever. No one has that power. They can't actually do that much. They're just identifying their line of good and bad. And it ultimately, reviews become a dialogue of, do I agree with this person? Are our lines of bad the same? Or are they different? Because if they're different, then that person's review is completely irrelevant to my life experience.
Okay.
I'm so glad it's helpful. I have received so many email messages from people because the site is almost 20 years old now. And I've received so many email messages from people who are like, Sarah, I love everything you hate. Keep up the good work. Which is like, wait, is my taste weird? Am I wrong if you like what I hate? But no, it's just that our lines of bad are in different places. And if I'm like, I don't like insta-love and I don't like Danger Boner, which is in a romantic suspense novel when the couple are being chased by the bad guy and they're in a stairwell and suddenly they must go to Bone Town.
Don't worry, I know what Danger Boner is.
Right? Like, so I don't like Danger Boner. Someone else is like, I love it when they get down in the stairwell and the bad guy's outside. That's my thing. So everyone is just looking to identify where their line of good and bad, but mostly bad, is, to see where it lines up. Because we're all looking for something to read in an endless sea of stuff. So it's hard not to take it personally, but it's really not about you at all. You're done. And if they said your name, you win.
I love that. That's you should honestly.
Cheers.
Package that and give it to any insecure young writer. I needed to hear that.
Excellent. I'm really glad.
For me, it's like when I put something up and I look at the people who don't like it and I think, what do you like? What is that quote from where it's like, it's The Simpsons where it's like, your boos mean nothing. I've seen what makes you cheer. I have a horrible feeling it's Rick and Morty.
It might be.
But it's like, I look at what they like, because if someone's actually, you know, calling me awful and I look at their page and it's like, you know, Christian nationalism, you know, anti-women, like, for me, I'm like, I'm okay if you don't like me.
Better that you don't, because if you did, I'd be concerned. That's my favorite thing on Reddit, when someone posts on Am I the Asshole? And all of the people who are telling them that they're not the asshole are then espousing things that are truly terrible. And the original asker goes, wait a minute, if everyone thinks that I'm right is terrible, then I think I was wrong.
Did you know that I got my start, the very first part of my career, the very inception of me on social media, was I was a dedicated Stan account for Am I the Asshole on Twitter.
No way, that's amazing.
I had notifications on, like, they call me, Miss Punnypenny came from the fact that I would reply and say this situation was, Am I the Asshole? My girlfriend Paige has broken up with me because of this, and this. And I'd be like, sounds like you need to turn the page on this relationship. I would be in there within seconds of it being posted. I had notifications on. I was on the bus. I was at work. It doesn't matter where I was in class. And I'd be like, got to get that pun as quick. I'd be the first. And I was obsessed. I was dedicated. Like, K-pop stans ain't got nothing on me.
This makes me so happy. I love puns.
But that my publicist followed me. Like, she didn't know me as a writer. She knew me as the pun girl. She followed me. She didn't even know. She was like, when it came time to, like, you know, putting the book to someone, you know, like, which publisher, she said something like, and I followed you when you used to do Reddit posts. And I was like, that one there, she gets me.
Yeah.
She knows me.
That's the publicist I need.
If you can't love me at my Am I the Asshole Reddit replies, you don't deserve me at my poems, Bessa.
Speaking of the feedback that you get an absolutely astonishing amount of sustained and revolting harassment. I hate that you have to put up with that. It sucks being a woman in public. What are things that you do to cope with this level of absolutely wretched behavior, in addition to writing kick-ass poems about it, which is pretty great?
Thank you. I do the opposite of what people tell me to do. So people tell me to delete the comments, block and ignore, just keep it to yourself, just don't make a big deal about it. What they mean when they say that is, stop making it my problem.
Yeah.
Just do it quietly.
Yeah.
Just endure. Endure.
Don't complain.
Quietly,
don't complain. No complaining. What do you have to complain about?
I complain to everyone. I complain to everyone. I screenshot them. I send them to my boyfriend. I send them to my, I'm like, look what this person said to me. And do you know what? It helps because we're social animals. We were not designed, first of all, to receive this much feedback.
No.
But second of all, we were not designed to keep things to ourselves. So I make it everybody else's problem, which people get annoyed at. And they want, they say, oh, you're giving them attention. You're giving, do you know, you're giving them oxygen. Do you know what happens when you give something too much oxygen? It ignites and it burns to death.
Sounds great.
So that's it. I'll give them oxygen. I'll keep giving them oxygen. Too much oxygen, all of the oxygen.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Even when you do that, you're the villain then because you are exposing them. And that's the funny thing is for one day, that person will receive a fraction of the hate I receive and they can't handle it. They never can.
Nope, never.
Plus, it serves a dual purpose as well, because when you are actively, publicly and loudly disavowing racism, yeah, or sexism, misogyny, homophobia, transphobia, what you're doing is you're telling other people, this is not tolerated.
Yes.
This will not stand. This will not fly. This will not happen in my house or at my kitchen table. So what I want to do is to create a situation that's so hostile to bigots.
Yes.
So hostile.
Yes.
That they don't even comment in the first place. I do the pin of shame. I think that's amazing. Because what I'm effectively saying is, have at it.
Yeah.
There you go. You wanted attention. Have at it.
Yeah, now you've got it. I'm sorry to say you will not like it.
I'm looking at you. What do you want? You want me to say, you want me to put you on my story as well? You want me to, you know, find the little Etsy link in your bio where you make Confederate flag t-shirts? You want me to go there as well? I'll go there.
Yeah, that's not a problem.
I can dance all night, mate.
You should be afraid to say these things out loud. You should be afraid to be taking these actions. You should be afraid to harass somebody who's just talking about Scots and like saying vile things to her. And there are so many people who... And this, you know, overlaps with domestic violence, who don't see people as people, but see people as possessions to be controlled. Yeah. And if you're a possession, mm-hmm, that's stepping out of control, then that's not to be tolerated.
I think it's also interesting the amount of self-policing that women do of other women.
Oh my God, yes. Yeah.
Because when I think I said, it wasn't even me. That's the thing. It wasn't even me. Someone put up a story saying she's so fucking great. And I put it on my story being like, hey, look, guys, you think I'm fucking great. And then someone was like, This elderly lady was like, you shouldn't use those words. Why? Fuck off. Why? Like, why? Why shouldn't I? It's because it's not ladylike. Okay, I'll never find a husband. Okay, I'll just go and tell my long-term partner that. It's like, and it's always the same people who are like, you'll be alone. You'll die alone. You'll have cats at 40. And I'm like, I roll over in bed to my partner and I'm like, hey, guess what this person just said? It's so insidious the way that they dehumanize so that they can attack.
Now, I was wondering if you would be willing to read something from Poems to give the listeners to the show a little peek into the book. I'm so excited you tossed it in from off camera. Oh, my little fangirl heart is joyful.
You are so easily amused.
Oh, listen, I am the queen of being easily amused. I started my own podcast.
Love it because you can do like, you can spend days and days and days like planning, rehearsing, scripting things. You throw a book in from off screen. Oh, it's like Christmas. I love it. It's the best way for me to bring joy to other people is to do what makes me happy. And what makes me happy is like, I can catch a book. Look at that. What do you want to hear?
Your favorite is not having children, right? Or it was your favorite.
It's certainly one of the ones that has the most, it gets a good reaction and it connects with people. So I usually leave it up to the person I'm talking to because whatever resonates with you is going to resonate with me. So if there's something that you want to hear, I'll absolutely do that.
All right. I do love I'm Not Having Children. I love
can
it.
Do that then. I'll do it.
Thank you.
I put it last in the book for a reason. I put it last because I wanted it to be the most hopeful piece, the most sort of outward looking. I can do I'm Not Having Children if that's your...
Bring it.
The poison you want to pick.
Bring it.
I'm no having children. I'm going to hear wains and you can ask what I cry them. No, what are their names? They'll be getting a piece. No, a wee packed lunch. They'll be hearing a scran. No, having a munch and they'll fanny a boot. They will only waste time. And when they scrieve their wee poems, I'll make sure they rhyme. I'm no having children. I'm going to hear wains who'll be gouping and beeling when they've got aches and pains. And instead of don't worry, I'll say dinny fash. Instead of stand your ground, dinny take only snash. My wains will be crab it. They'll in a bad mood and they'll greet. No cry when their day isn't good. I'm no having children. I'm going to hear Wains with a prude ancient language crammed in their wee brains, and whenever life tells them their English is bad, I'll tell them the hassles that their mammy had, and I'll say my ma's words to the day that I'm dead. You'll be all right, hen, you've a good Scots tongue and your heat.
I love it so much. Thank you. Oh, that's delightful. Now, I always ask this question, what books are you reading, if you are, any books that you have read that you would like to tell people about?
In terms of Scots poetry, I recently read Dwams by Shane Strachan, who had this 10, 12 minute epic poem about the relationship between gas and oil, the industry, and Aberdeen.
Oh,
so Aberdeen in Scotland is like it's a place where gas and oil like supported like a lot of jobs, a lot of infrastructure, a lot of industry. So this is basically like as if the gas and oil industry were sending like horny texts.
Well, I mean, the gas industry and the oil industry are pretty horny.
It's like a you up, like kind of cheeky, and to hear it performed in real life, because Shane supported me on it was at the Edinburgh Date, and to hear that performed in real time was incredible. I would also want to just like tell you about Gray Crosby,
yeah,
who is a phenomenal poet who wrote this piece called Taboo, and it sits with me, it stays with me, like it lives in my bones now. It's about period sex.
Oh, and,
oh my God. No, genuinely, I was watching Gray perform it and I had tears in my eyes because I was just like, this is so visceral and raw. And it just was such a beautiful grotesqueness to it. Not in the sense that it was gross, but in the sense that it was meant to be gross. Like, we're meant to perceive periods as taboo, as, you know, something that's shameful or dirty. And the way Gray put it through was like it was an element of romanticism of it, and oh my God, stunning, honestly stunning. If you get the chance to get to hear Gray perform, oh it's delicious. It's that's, absolutely sublime.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Where can people find you if you wish to be found on the internet? Where can people find you?
People could find me on Instagram. I'm Len Penny on Instagram. I am Miss Punny Penny on TikTok.
Yeah.
I am Lentil Pentel on Twitter. Look, someone commented that and was like, imagine if you change your name to Lentil Pentel. And I was like, it's never going back.
Done,
it's
lads.
It's never going back.
It's done.
I'm Lentil Pentel till the day I die. Where else? I'm nowhere else. There's a Facebook impersonating me, but that's not me. So don't give that bitch any views. Do I look like I have a website? Do I look like I have the mental kind of capacity to be making websites?
I mean, it's a pain in the ass, I won't lie.
But anyway, I talk enough shit on you know, Instagram socials. And on the socials.
Thank you so much for doing this interview. It has been a delight to meet you in person. And I'm so happy that the Instagram algorithm started showing me your content. And I'm so, so excited for your book to come out in the States. Thank you so much for your time today. It has been an utter delight to talk to you.
Oh, it's been wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you for your book. And that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you very, very much to Len and her publicity team for scheduling this interview and for taking the time to talk to me. It's really fun for me to talk to people just outside of the romance community who I encounter online, and I'm just really excited to meet and talk to. And it's always an honor to be told, oh, yes, absolutely, let's do that interview. Because some people are like, you run a website about what now and you're who? It's really nice. I have asked for reviews because that is an important thing for podcasting, and y'all have come through. Thank you so, so much. I want to say a particular thank you to It, Son of Them, who called this show, quote, the most enjoyable, thoughtful, informative, and all-around listenable romance podcast. Wow, thank you. I do work really hard to make it listenable, and I appreciate that very much. Reviews make a massive difference in putting the show in front of other people. So if you have taken the time with your thumbs or your whole hands, I mean, if you went to the desktop or the laptop for a review, I'm not going to stop you, and I'm honored. But if you've taken the time to review the show, thank you so much. It makes a massive difference. I will, of course, have links to everything we talked about, including some performances by the poets that she mentioned, such as Gray Crosby, and links to some of the other poems and books that she mentioned as well. All of Len's recs will be in my show notes. Do not worry. As always, I end with a terrible joke. And this joke is a Scots dad joke. I'm really excited about this. And if Len listens, she's going to be horrified at my attempt here. Okay, are you ready? What's the difference between Bing Crosby and Walt Disney? Give up? What's the difference between Bing Crosby and Walt Disney? Oh, Bing sings and Walt Disney. What, get it? Walt doesn't, or Disney, doesn't it? Disney. Walt Disney. I can't even say it. It's so embarrassing. All right, so please laugh at me, but I'm going to leave it in. On behalf of everyone here, we wish you the very best of reading. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you back here next week. I'm so embarrassed. Smart Podcast Trashy Books is part of the Podcast Network. You can find one embarrassed podcaster and some outstanding podcasts to listen to at frolic.media/podcasts. It's really good this is audio only because my head is now entirely on fire. Wow. Okay.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.